Teaching ELL students is a privilege and a joy. Is it easy? No way. But with the right support, you can feel empowered to tackle each day with ease and confidence. I'm your host, Beth Boucher, founder of Inspiring Young Learners. With over 10 years of teaching both nationally and internationally, I know what it takes to ensure that your ELL students have what they need to thrive today, tomorrow, and for life. I'm on a mission to empower you to equip your English language learners. Welcome to Equipping ELLs. Let's get to today's episode. Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Equipping ELLs podcast. Today, I want to talk and dive more into the world of collaborative teaching strategies for English language learners. I want to share more about the do's and don'ts of successful co-teaching. Now, if you haven't read the book, Co-Teaching for English Learners, A Guide to Collaborative Planning, Instruction, Assessment, and Reflection by Andrea Honingsfield and Maria Dove, that is a definite checkout. You might want to put that on your list for the summer to read. It's a fantastic read all about co-teaching and really all you need to know about it. So today I'm going to kind of give a brief overview from their foundations that they share and give you some do's and don'ts with each of the five foundations. So let's dive into foundation number one, and that is creating the foundation of co-teaching. So let's just stop and think about the story of co-teaching, right? We have two or more educators, diverse in their expertise, and they're joining forces, they're joining their skill sets together for one ultimate goal. And what's that? To enrich the learning journey of every student, especially our English language learners. So what does that come down to? What is the secret sauce behind this successfully happening? Well, what's most important is having mutual respect, clear communication, and shared objectives. Okay, mutual respect, clear communication, and shared objectives. Remember that in a co-teaching partnership, every role is pivotal and every contribution is valuable. It's not just about the homeroom teachers leading the charge and the ESL teacher kind of just comes in quietly and shares whenever they have something to say. It's truly about seeing each role as critical and pivotal in the success of helping our English language learners. So let's talk about some do's and don'ts. The first thing is don't assume roles without discussion. All right, so this is where we really want to avoid the pitfall where one teacher becomes the primary instructor and the other one fades into the background. I'm sure some of you right now are thinking of those collaborations, those co-teaching situations where you know that there is one teacher who leads the charge. Maybe it's a teacher that's been around for many, many years and has all their lesson plans done and is pulling out their lessons from the previous year and really doesn't want to change the way that they do things. Now, you have a choice. Are you going to advocate for yourself or for the other teachers and really all come together and say, hey, we all are a really crucial part of this and let's define our roles. What we want to do is we want to establish a co-teaching agreement that outlines roles, expectations, and communication strategies. Things like, are we going to talk through email or do we do this through a Google Doc form? Or do you like texting best? What is the best way that we're going to communicate? And maybe this would be amazing if this comes from administration. And so you don't have to come up with this on your own because sometimes those can be tough conversations to have. Or we think we have too much to do when it comes to supporting our students. We don't have time to come up with a co-teaching agreement. But I want to discourage you from that mindset. Having those clear roles defined and, you know, even the meeting agenda, what are you going to cover? That is going to help you be most successful when it comes to collaborating with other teachers. So take some time and think that through and work on that together. Don't compete for authority or undermine each other in front of students, because this can really create a disjointed and confusing learning environment. I know I had been in situations where maybe as the homeroom teacher, I did not agree with the ESL teacher, or I was upset because they didn't provide the support they said they were going to provide. And so it created a kind of a disagreement. And there were times when this discussion would happen in the hallway in front of the other students. And that we really want to be careful about that. We really want to be a united front of teachers supporting our students. So instead, what you should do is regularly acknowledge and celebrate each other's strengths and contributions to create a positive and inclusive classroom environment. Look at those other teachers that you're collaborating with. What strengths do they bring to the table? Where can they really shine? What strengths do you bring to the table? Okay, when we can look at our teams as strengths and what, you know, whether it's personality, whether it's just their skill set that they have, maybe it's their knowledge they have about something, and we can really hone into those strengths of each individual on our collaboration team, that's when our students really have success and where we can then feel okay with maybe taking a backseat on specific areas and maybe taking the lead on specific areas. So really get to know those teachers and know what their strengths are. Personality tests always are really helpful to know who you're working with and why they do the things they do. So things like 16 personalities or Enneagrams might be a great place to start so you can have a good idea of the people you're working with and their strengths and also their weaknesses, and as well as they can get to know you and your strengths and weaknesses. All right, so now let's look at foundation number 2. And this is to plan together. So as we dive into the instructional realm, remember this, that our English language learners thrive on engagement, interaction, and support. So we really want to focus on our planning time coming together to talk about techniques like scaffolding, how they can incorporate visual aids, how they can create activities that are more fostering to interactive learning. These are not just strategies, they truly are lifelines to help your ELL students continue to progress to proficiency. So let's talk about the do's and don'ts when it comes to planning together. First, don't plan in isolation or overlook the unique needs of your ELLs. I have seen this happen many times where teachers just kind of teach their students all at the same language level and think, well, they'll get it. They'll pick it up. Okay, that is the opposite, especially if you have an ESL teacher in your school. You want to use their skill set in planning. So you want to sit down together and to weave in those language goals. Now, what's really important here is the pre-planning. So don't just come to a meeting and sit down and say, okay, what are we working on this week? All right, here's my idea. This is where the meetings can get really long and you don't make much progress. I know that time is one of the biggest issues in really collaborating well. When you don't have a lot of time, it feels very disjointed, or maybe you have a half hour plan a week and you feel like, what can we really get done in half an hour? If you come prepared, you can get all you need to be done in that half hour. So what does that look like? Already, maybe you have a Google Doc with that team that you're working with. And before you come to that meeting, they should already have filled out, here's our text we're reading for the week. Here's our, you know, this assessment we're doing this week. They should give you an outline over sitting in the meeting. And this has happened to me before, that I would sit in a meeting and they would then walk through, okay, when are we going to plan this? What are we going to do here? And I was in that meeting. This is the first time I had heard about what the plans were for the week. But think of the difference is if you do a pre-planning and you have an agenda that you always fill out on the same Google Doc, and they need to, by this day, have in what is going to be covered that week. Now, before you meet, you can look at that and either just quickly come up with ideas. And so maybe you share that at the meeting, or maybe you can take that text and you can already scaffold it for them. And so you're going to share that at the meeting. But when you are able to have a glance at the week before you sit in on that team meeting, that's where the collaboration piece is going to be really powerful. So it might just be a quick glance and you go, okay, I know I can share these three scaffolds with them during the meeting and this is going to help them plan better. But that pre-planning piece is really important. Another don't ignore the cultural backgrounds and prior knowledge of your ELLs during the planning process, because we want to make sure we're leveraging these as we enhance their learning and increase engagement. So what we want to do is to incorporate both content and language objectives in your lesson plans to ensure your ELs are learning both subject matter and English at the same time. So this might look like having your content objectives ready during that meeting and having the EL specialist help you create the language objectives. The more you can do that together, the more homeroom teachers are going to feel confident in writing language objectives and knowing how to use them effectively. Now, another don't. You don't want to neglect the input of the ELL specialist. I know I've been on this side too. I've been on the homeroom teacher side where we just say, well, we don't have time to meet with the ELL specialist, and so it's not that important. That is a terrible idea because their expertise in language acquisition is absolutely invaluable in crafting effective lessons. So what we want to do is really, if we can get to this point, this is where there's going to be a lot of success. And you might not even, your weekly meetings, if you have 30 minutes to meet, might just be check-ins. So what you want to be able to do is use backward design to plan your lessons. Start with the end goal in mind and plan activities that support language and content objectives. So start with the end goal. Maybe that's just looking at the assessments and planning with the ELL specialist, the assessments that you're going to do for that unit. And now, maybe the homeroom teachers, you can on your own plan how you're going to reach that end goal. Or maybe that's something where you spend a little bit more time and backward plan that whole lesson with the scaffolds and supports in place. Now you have for 2 or 3 weeks everything set up and ready to go. Let's move on to foundation 3, instructional strategies. All right, so effective co-teaching for ELLs requires a toolkit of diverse instructional strategies. This is where we really need homeroom teachers to be using scaffolding and differentiating their instruction and really all coming together with the goal to make content comprehensible. All right, so we want to make content comprehensible while still challenging students linguistically and cognitively. So that is really our goal, and that happens in instructional strategies. So what does this look like? What are the do's and don'ts of instructional strategies? So the don'ts are, don't overuse teacher-led instruction. Okay, we really want to be mindful of this. I would even challenge any teacher listening to time yourself. How much time are you talking, and how many minutes are you giving your ELLs opportunities to practice language and engage with content? Are you talking 80% of the time and only giving them 20%? That's a real eye-opener for how you're doing your instruction. The more we can give them opportunities to practice language, to output, the more successful they will be. So what we want to do is we want to implement strategies, things like think pair shares or cooperative learning strategies, or using graphic organizers and interactive activities. And this helps to cater to their various language proficiency levels. So being really purposeful in the language levels you have in your class and implementing strategies that really support them. Now, don't stick to only one co-teaching model or instructional strategy, because this can sometimes limit the effectiveness and responsiveness of your teaching to your students with diverse needs. So what you should do instead is to implement a co-teaching model, things like station teaching or parallel teaching, to differentiate instruction and provide more targeted support to ELLs. And with this, what you really want to think about is starting with one style of co-teaching, getting comfortable with that, because so much of it, the success of that will come with the communication, with the respect that you have with your co-teacher. So don't feel like you need to switch up right away. But you do want to try out different teaching models. And then you'll be able to see, especially with different groups of students, different styles of models work, or different, if you have different goals that you're working on in that classroom, you'll want to implement different models to really help to reach that goal. All right, next foundation of co-teaching is assessment and reflection. Now, just a reminder that assessment is not just a checkpoint. It's really a compass guiding our teaching journey. The power of reflecting on your ELL students' progress is like looking into a mirror that reflects not just their growth, but also the impact of your teaching strategy. Now, in this situation, formative assessments are definitely the way to go here. They are our allies. That's what we want to focus on for continual and quick check-ins. They offer timely insights and they help to shape our instructional path. Remember that summative assessments, they tell the story, but formative assessments write the chapters. So it's really, we want to implement both summative and formative assessments, but really focusing in on those formative assessments between the different units that we're teaching. What does this look like and what doesn't this look like? First, don't solely rely on traditional tests that may not accurately reflect EL's understanding or language progress. I've been guilty of this so many times where I have not scaffolded any assessments. I give them the grade level test. And when they don't do well on it, I think, well, they must not have learned anything. And that was kind of the thought that I would have. And it wasn't accurate at all. And once I started to provide different ways, once I started to, you know, use more formative assessments to monitor progress and to adjust my teaching strategies, I was able to really see what my students were learning, what they were able to output, what did stick with them. And that was a much better place to be than just, you know, once every 3 weeks, giving them a test and grading it and then moving on. It wasn't beneficial to my students' progress or to seeing where I needed to redirect my instruction to really support these students. You don't also want to overlook the importance of self-assessment and peer feedback, because this can really help foster responsibility, a deeper learning. It can help them to build those peer relationships and receive that feedback from a peer in a different way. So don't overlook that. You do want to use things like alternative assessments, such as portfolios or project-based assessments, giving students opportunities to choose. Give them some autonomy when it comes to sharing and demonstrating their understanding and skills. You will get better buy-in, better engagement, and better output when you choose to do assessments like that. And then the last foundation is navigating challenges, because like any relationship, co-teaching has its ups and downs, but facing challenges head on is a part of the journey. So don't let challenges hinder your partnership. Don't just, you know, assume this is how it is and let it stew and build tension, but really seek solutions collaboratively. On the same lines, don't let frustrations fester. Address issues promptly and constructively. So what you want to do instead is to schedule regular co-planning and reflection meetings to address challenges and celebrate successes. Maybe once a month, you and your co-teaching team grab lunch together. Maybe you go out and grab lunch, or you order in and do something a little bit special. And you just talk, hey, how's this going? How can we, you know, what's an area we can work on? Small bite-sized ways that you can work on collaborating and, you know, helping those areas that have been tough is going to help this be a successful relationship for the long run, which in turn helps you and helps your students. So as we wrap up today's journey into the heart of co-teaching, I really want you to carry forward the spirit of collaboration, respect, and our shared commitment to our English language learners' success. That, at the end of the day, is the goal. Co-teaching isn't just about sharing space. It's really about sharing vision, goals, and most importantly, the journey. Sometimes you need to go slow in order to get to this place where co-teaching is powerful and it is successful. But sometimes at the beginning, we skip over those really important steps of building that relationship with our co-teaching team, of finding who these teachers are, you know, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, how we can work together successfully, setting up those things like roles and communication expectations. And importantly, I hope your big takeaway is spending the time pre-planning and setting up a weekly agenda or weekly meeting and knowing what each of your responsibilities are to do before you get together in that meeting. And I promise if you do that, you will see that those meetings run much smoother, you get a lot more done, and you really start to begin to collaborate together. Now, if you do want more information, I highly recommend checking out Co-Teaching for English Learners, A Guide to Collaborative Planning, Instruction, Assessment, and Reflection by Maria G. Dove and Andrea Honingsfield. If you share our mission and want to empower educators to equip their English language learners, will you do us a huge favor and leave a review on wherever you're listening to this podcast, or post it on your social media and let other teachers know about this episode. We'll be sharing more episodes coming up about how to successfully collaborate together. I'll see you then. Thank you for joining me in today's episode. All links and resources mentioned can be found in the show notes. If you're looking for even more support and done-for-you resources created specifically for the needs of ELLs, head to inspiringyounglearners.com. I'll catch you here next week.
Until then, take that next step to keep equipping your ELLs.